got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
At least 63 million of the U.S. population, as of today, have had at least one COVID-19 vaccination, with half having had the full required dose, while Floridians have had almost 4 million of the population receiving at least one dose, and just over 2 million, or 10% of the population in our state, fully vaccinated.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, has recently released their updated guidelines recommending that in fully vaccinated persons who have been exposed to suspected or confirmed COVID-19, quarantining is not necessary.
It must be at least 2 weeks from receipt of the full series of vaccinations, be it the one or two dose vaccines. The vaccinated person must be asymptomatic following COVID-19 exposure and should quarantine for at least 14 days from any contact with an infected individual.
By definition, close contact with someone who has COVID-19 means being within 6 feet for a time period of 15 minutes or more. Providing home care to someone who COVID-19, direct physical contact, sharing utensils, food, beverages, or direct exposure to respiratory droplets.
So why did the CDC issue these recommendations, knowing that the risk of COVID-19 transmission from a vaccinated individual to an unvaccinated individual is frankly unknown? The CDC's contention is that avoiding unnecessary quarantine may provide both individual and societal benefits that outweigh the risk of unknown transmission.
This recommendation to waive quarantine in persons with vaccine-derived immunity matches the recommendation to waive quarantine in persons who have natural immunity developed from a previous coronavirus infection.
So, fully vaccinated people can visit indoors without a mask or even social distancing with other individuals who are also fully vaccinated. And they can also visit indoors without a mask or social distancing with members of a single household who have not yet been vaccinated but are at low risk for developing severe COVID-19.
They can also refrain from quarantining if he exposed to an individual with known or suspected COVID-19.
The CDC emphasizes that fully vaccinated individuals must continue to take precautions when out in public, including wearing masks, practicing social distancing, avoiding large gatherings, and getting tested if they experience COVID-19 symptoms. Anyone that is high risk should not be close to anyone, either those who have been fully vaccinated or not, unless both are wearing masks.
So remember, if you have been fully vaccinated and decide to go to a restaurant or other areas where there are people whose immunity or risks are not known, then it's recommended that you follow all the rules that we have been following for the past year, that being wearing appropriate masks and keeping a 6-foot social distance.
You know, so much is lost over time when we hear about medical breakthroughs before they are either approved or disapproved. So it was gratifying for me to go over some of the stories from medical trials that were done in 2019 and just recently approved for use in patients. For example, in 2019, there was a story about a man named Richard Berry who had prostate cancer, which had already metastasized to other tissues.
He had tried surgery, radiation, as well as chemotherapy. He was lucky in that he was able to participate in a clinical trial. Obviously, he knew this was his last chance.
So in 2015, he was given that opportunity to try a new drug called enzalutamide, which is an androgen receptor inhibitor that stops the growth of cancer cells. It was being tested by Dr. Christopher Sweeney, who's an oncologist at Boston's Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Berry became one of 1,125 patients involved in the trial.
After the trial, he was found to be cancer-free. In fact, he was in deep remission for a period of 1 year at a time. The article appeared in the news.
Fast forward to today, and we see that the drug, enzalutamide, has been approved and is marketed under the brand name Xtandi. From that same article in late 2019 came the report that researchers at the University of Nottingham in England have created a blood test that could potentially detect breast cancer up to 5 years before a lump or other symptoms appear.
That test looked for autoantibodies produced by the body in reaction to cancer cells in the blood and was much less expensive, for example, than mammograms.
Well, let's fast forward again, and another article just was published, and it talked about Foundation One Liquid CDX, which has been approved by the FDA and is available right now, that looks at genes from a simple blood draw. It's the only FDA-approved blood-based test to analyze over 300 genes. And that makes it the most comprehensive FDA-approved liquid biopsy on the market. Now, a similar test for lung cancer is currently being studied in Scotland.
How about a new cystic fibrosis trial of a drug called Trikafta, which is a triple combination therapy, which showed significant improvements in cystic fibrosis patients' respiratory health and lung function.
It was fast-tracked by the FDA and is now available to patients 12 and older who have the most common cystic fibrosis mutation, which could affect almost 90% of the people with the disease. And that's about, 27,000 people in the United States alone.
Sickle cell anemia is a fairly common disease, especially among Afro-Americans. Remember that every living thing is made up of many building blocks called cells.
As a matter of fact, the human body has trillions of cells, and they're divided into many different types, like muscle, bone, as well as red and white blood cells. Now, genes, they're made of DNA, and they're like the instruction manual for the body. Some genes contain instructions that tell each cell how to make their particular proteins, which perform many different functions within our bodies. Now, getting back to sickle cell anemia, this disease affects the red blood cells. It's an inherited disease, and that means it's not contagious and you can't catch it from someone else.
So people with sickle cell have the disease because they inherit two sickle cell genes, one from the mother and the other from the father. These genes cause the production of irregular hemoglobin.
Let's call the abnormal hemoglobin cell HbA and the normal one HbB. Now, there are actually two types of maladies, one called sickle cell trait and the other one called sickle cell disease.
So, if either parent gives the fetus one copy of this sickle HbB gene and the other parent provides a copy of a normal HbB gene, then the infant will carry the sickle cell trait.
It's only when both parents give the abnormal HbA cell to the child that there will be sickle cell disease. Now, those who carry the trait may not have symptoms of sickle cell, or they can experience some of the symptoms of sickle cell under extreme circumstances like high altitude, severe dehydration, and low oxygen, which can lead to kidney and spleen complications, and even sudden death with extreme exertion. A simple blood test from your doctor can determine if you are a carrier.
Unfortunately, it is often perceived as a black disease because it most often affects the black community in the United States, and this has caused racial bias.
There's an interesting relationship between sickle cell and malaria. Plasmodium falciparum causes a type of malaria and is carried by a particular type of mosquito that is common in many African countries. It seems that those persons with sickle cell trait are relatively protected against the danger of dying of malaria.
On the other hand, patients who have sickle cell anemia are highly susceptible to the lethal effects of malaria. So, just mathematically, it can be said that sickle cell trait protects many in Africa from getting and dying from malaria.
So it's really great that there's now an ongoing clinical trial for sickle cell disease. Now let's talk about Manny Johnson, who was 22 years old at the time of the study on sickle cell patients. He used to require monthly blood transfusions, but for more than a year, he has been symptom-free after undergoing the treatment in Boston. Now, the treatment is based on 70 years of research, and it uses an infusion of the patient's own reworked bone marrow to help the body produce normal red blood cells consistently.
Now, let's talk about red blood cells. They have been in the news recently when it was found that a person's blood type could impact their susceptibility to COVID-19.
As recently as this past week, an article was published in the scientific journal called Blood Advances that the virus that causes COVID-19, that is SARS-CoV-2, appears to have a blood type preference. In particular, COVID-19 seems to gravitate towards blood group A in respiratory cells.
The same can't be said for red blood cells in the same group. The study also shows that there is no preference towards respiratory or red blood cells in type B and O blood groups.
Remember that the study does not show that people with blood type B and O are immune to the virus, but it does suggest that blood type A individuals are more likely to get infected. Since blood type is an inherited trait, it's not something we can change. However, a better understanding of why this occurs may help us figure out how the virus interacts with blood groups in people, and this could ultimately help researchers find a cure. Both red and white blood cells circulate around our bodies in the bloodstream, among other things such as platelets. They are constantly moving around, starting, let's say, in the blood in our lungs, where the hemoglobin of the red blood cells picks up oxygen, which is transported to the brain and other essential areas in our bodies, and where, after traveling all around the body, transports the waste product called carbon dioxide back to the lungs where it is expelled.
While blood travels at about 3 feet per second, when it leaves the heart, it slows down as it gets into smaller arteries and capillaries and takes a minute to get around the body.
So 5 quarts of blood per minute are transported around the body, and that means around 7 billion miles during a lifetime. Now, that's something to think about. As the blood moves through the body, it circulates about 20 to 30 trillion red blood cells. So even a single drop of blood contains millions of red blood cells. And about 4.5 million are in females and a bit more in males.
Something pretty interesting about red blood cells is that they lack a nucleus, so they only live for about 120 days and must be replaced at the same rate as they disappear from the blood, about 2.5 million cells per second.
When someone has a high number of red blood cells per volume of blood than normal, it's called polycythemia. When this abnormality occurs, it can increase blood volume pressure and viscosity or thickness of the blood.
When the number of red blood cells is decreased and the hemoglobin concentration contained in the red cells goes down, then it is called anemia.
There are a number of different types of anemia. We've already mentioned one, that being sickle cell anemia, but there are several other types. And when there's a decrease in red blood cells, there's also a decrease in hemoglobin, which means that there is a decrease in the amount of oxygen that can be carried by the red blood cells to different parts of the body. Now, there are essentially 6 general types of anemia. The first that we're going to talk about is pernicious anemia, and that's caused by vitamin B12 deficiency. You should note that vitamin B12 is crucial for producing healthy red blood cells, in addition to supporting your nervous system, promoting mental clarity, and basically optimizing your metabolism. With this disease, pernicious anemia, you're unable to absorb vitamin B12 from natural food sources. This results in severe depletion of vitamin B12 levels in your blood. The symptoms of vitamin B12 deficiency, and these include fatigue, dizziness, tingling in your hands and or feet, brain fog, memory loss, depression, and even aggression.
The treatment is often weekly vitamin B12 injections. As an alternative, a patient with pernicious anemia may be able to be treated with over-the-counter vitamin B12 supplements.
Next on our list is hemolytic anemia. Now, hemolytic anemia occurs when red blood cells are destroyed at a rate that is quicker than their reproduction in bone marrow. Remember we said we lose about 2.5 million red cells a second? People who have hemolytic anemia have either inherited it as a genetic disease or actually acquired it later in life. Mild hemolytic anemia does not usually require treatment, but severe anemia can be life-threatening, requiring blood transfusions, steroids, and even splenectomy, where the spleen is removed.
Another type of anemia is aplastic anemia, which can be life-threatening. Here, your bone marrow is unable to produce sufficient amounts of crucial blood cells, including red blood cells, white blood cells, and blood platelets.
Diagnosis of anemia includes testing. That includes low blood count of any of the three blood types. Causes of aplastic anemia include autoimmune disease, which is the most common cause, as well as exposure to chemotherapy and other types of radiation.
Treatments for aplastic anemia include bone marrow transplants, blood transfusions, and restraining of the immune system.
Fanconi anemia is a very rare blood disorder, and it too is inherited as a genetic disease. It involves bone marrow failure and can lead to myelogenous leukemia. Even with bone marrow transplants, patients with Fanconi anemia, unfortunately, they rarely live past the age of 30. Now, finally, we have bone marrow disease anemia. Sometimes bone marrow diseases such as leukemia and myelodysplasia, that's pre-leukemia, create symptoms of anemia in patients, as diseased bone marrow causes inadequate production of the red blood cells.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
One of the most common and unwanted side effects of chemotherapy in patients with cancer is the loss of hair.
A company named Dignitana has a product now available to all who need it called the DigniCap Cooling System. Its concept is really simple and it works. The system cools the scalp, which reduces blood flow to that area so that less chemo reaches the hair cells. Another malady of age is double chin. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we could somehow erase this?
There is now a product called Kyvella that has been ADA approved. It is an injection that causes the fat cells under the skin to dissolve and melt away so you can tighten up the turkey neck.
Did you know that there are now condoms that warn of the presence of an STD? Well, now researchers are developing a condom that contains AIDS-fighting plant-based antioxidants. And this means that even if the condom breaks, well, you're still protected. In the near future, you won't have to pop pills every time you have a headache. Are you someone who often relies on ibuprofen for pain and headache relief?
Researchers have developed the first painkiller patch, which delivers ibuprofen through the skin in a constant dose for up to 12 hours and to localize areas. So if your shoulder hurts after a strenuous gym session, you'll be able to slap a patch directly onto the sore area, fast relief.
Prosthetic technology and development always feel like the stuff of science fiction, but these bionic body parts are quickly becoming more fact than fiction. Now, almost ready for prime time is a retinal eye implant from a company called Second Light.
You could call it the bionic eye, and its purpose is to restore vision by reestablishing the link between the retina and the visual cortex in the brain.
On March 5th, it was approved by the FDA. By the way, its stock rose over 1,000% immediately on FDA approval. We'll be making medical breakthroughs in the new year. We're just in the beginning of 2021, and several new medical ideas, products, and procedures are being noted in the news.
For example, physicians at the Cleveland Clinic say they expect the biggest medical innovation in 2021 will be a new gene therapy designed to actually cure the genetic problems in red blood cells. This would cure sickle cell anemia
Why is this so innovative? Well, this gene therapy goes in and actually changes the genetic code of these blood cells and allows them to actually produce normal hemoglobin. Dr. Will Morris said that this is literally a game-changing intervention that actually cures, and I'm going to underline that word, cures the patient and allows them to live a normal and productive life.
We also expect a new therapy for a progressive form of multiple sclerosis to be announced this year, as well as a new medical device to reduce bleeding after childbirth.
There should also be a non-invasive ventilator to help premature infants breathe better and a pacemaker that can be linked to your smartphone.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy.
The clip you just heard was from a song called Don't Worry, Be Happy, sung by Bob Marley. What's that you say? Not Bob Marley? Well, actually, no. It was written and sung by Bobby McFerrin and released in 1988, about 7 years after Bob Marley died. So although Bob Marley could never have sung this song, it's a common myth, or what I like to call a myth stake, that is believed by many people.
In reality, we need to look out for those both in our daily lives and our present perception of just what is fact and what is fiction.
Another one common to those in my era was the fact that Betty Crocker created all those recipes. The fact is there was no Betty Crocker. Betty Crocker is a brand and a fictional character used in advertising campaigns for food and recipes. Now, the character was originally created by the Washburn Crosby Company way back in 1921 as a way to give a personalized response to consumer product questions. But, of course, there are more important myths, and some even more important than that, that give rise to false facts that many of us take for granted as being true. We've all heard of fake news. Another myth that is believed, perhaps by the majority of people, is that microwave ovens heat food by operating at a special resonance of water molecules in the food.
They do not, but they do heat food by what is called dielectric heating, with the polar molecules like water move or rotate back and forth with the changing electric field, such as with a radio frequency, radio wave, or microwave electromagnetic radiation.
The reason that I mention this is because microwave ovens do not cook food from the inside out. Most of today's microwaves can only penetrate approximately 1 centimeter or less than 1/2 inch into most foods. The inside portions of thicker foods are mainly heated by heat conducted from the outer portions.
And because of the way the molecules heat, microwave ovens cannot cause cancer, as microwave radiation is non-ionizing and therefore does not have the cancer risk associated with ionizing radiation such as X-rays.
No studies on the cancer risk associated with microwaves have identified any carcinogenicity from microwave radiation, even with exposure levels far greater than is likely for humans to encounter from leaking ovens.
This is important to know in this age of the microwave oven, which is practically in every household.
Now, some myths are only partially true. Take Uncle Ben's rice. According to Forrest Mars, one of the early owners of the rice brand, Uncle Ben was an African-American rice grower known for the quality of his rice. So from 1946 to 2020, Uncle Ben's products carried the image of an elderly African-American man dressed in a bow tie, which is said to have been based on a Chicago maitre d' named Frank Brown.
So there is no proof that there ever was an actual Ben. But then again, no proof that he did not exist. We do know, however, the picture of Ben on the package certainly was not of him.
Our point here is that it is important to always keep in the back of your mind the possibility that what you hear, even what you see, although possibly plausible, may not be true. And in fact, may be a total lie.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.